From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon's Rainy Day Conversations, broadcasting from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gwyneth Chi, Shawa Toksugnusum Salama. Thank you for sharing your time with us. Today, our guest is Alaskan author Eowyn Ivey. Eowyn's first novel, The Snow Child, was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and has been translated into over 25 languages. Her latest novel, Blackwood's Blue Sky, was released on February 4th, 2025. We spoke the day before about where this news story comes from, her feelings on the eve of its release, her writing process, and more. Grab a warm beverage and a nice cozy chair by the window. It's our rainy day conversation with Eowyn Ivey, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau kanakaya ha ane kak gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, it's our rainy day conversation with author Eowyn Ivey. Her novel, The Snow Child, was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Her latest work, releasing in February of 2025, is Blackwood's Blue Sky. I'm honored to welcome Eowyn, who is joining me from her home outside of Anchorage up in the woods, which is really nice. Gwyneth Cheesh Ha'igudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here, Eowyn. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to get to talk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we are talking, we're recording this conversation. It's the day before Blackwood's Blue Sky comes out. It releases to the world. And this morning, you wrote on your Instagram in a post talking about where this story came from. Can you share some of those thoughts with us about what you were writing about this morning on your post?
Yeah, you know, this has been, I know of anything that I've ever written, books or essays, anything, this is the closest to my heart. And this morning, I'm so glad you saw that Instagram post, because I felt like I was finally kind of able to articulate what this book meant to me. Growing up in Alaska, my family, they were big readers, and my grandparents gave me a copy of The Beauty and the Beast. It's illustrated by Mercer Mayer. It's a beautiful copy in 1980. And I just recently came back across it and saw in there where they'd said, Merry Christmas, Eowyn, from Papa and Yaya. And that story has just always really stayed with me. And over the years, I've collected a lot of different kind of retellings of this idea of a shapeshifter, a man who is sort of cursed to be a beast also, you know, and oftentimes it can be a bear or a lion, or in the Beauty and the Beast, it's sort of an unnameable beast, just, you know. And the idea is that a woman's love, this woman who is beautiful and virtuous, can break the curse. And I just grew up as a little girl seeing something very, very different. As much as I love my parents, it was a very troubled relationship and one that was very frightening to me as a little girl. And so as I wanted to write this story, I kind of wanted to just write into those fears and write into the sort of fallacy, this idea that somehow love really can make everything okay. And I just think it's a lot more complicated than that. And I think there's something about fairy tales and myths, different kinds of stories that are so a part of us that we can tap into them and they can allow us to sort of explore complicated human emotions, I think. And that's really what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's really fantastic the way you expressed yourself in terms of that post and just now as well. I think it's, taking these stories or, things we hear they sort of become idealized in a way in terms of a certain feeling about it. And but then to sort of really unpack that or explore it in a different way and sort of see a different truth to it, there's just something about that that I find fascinating, to be able to unpack that. And you do that so well in your writing. And we'll talk about that in a little bit as well, in terms of how you deal with the structure of your writing, which I think is just incredible. Is it possible, since we are talking on this day before the book releases on February 4th, to describe the feeling of the right before moment of when this book is going to go out to the world? I know reviewers have had it in their pockets and things like that, but like in terms of like giving it out to the community of readers, what's that feeling like for you as an author?
Well, it's funny because I have to say this is the most nervous I've ever been about having a book come out, which seems strange. But like with The Snow Child, I had no expectations. I had no credentials as a writer. I had just hoped to maybe get it published with like a regional publisher. So everything that happened with The Snow Child was completely unexpected. And just, I didn't even have time to be nervous. I was just sort of bowled over by the whole process. And then when To the Bright Edge of the World came out, I felt kind of at ease because I felt like, okay, The Snow Child did beyond my expectations. It did so well. I can kind of rest on my laurels. And with that book, I just really wrote what I wanted to write. I had so much fun writing it and I didn't really have any expectations, and it was well received by critics. It didn't sell like The Snow Child did, but it did well enough, you know? And then with this one, for some reason, I am just incredibly nervous. And I don't really, I think part of it is because it is so close to my heart. It's so much inspired by sort of my fears and sense of wonder as a child. I know that people that knew my family growing up are going to read this book. And then I also feel like I feel a nervousness about it. I want it to do well, you know, to be received well. And I don't think I've felt that before about a book. So yeah, I'm nervous, I guess, is the long and short of it.
I love that. But it's always nice to have those little bit of nerves. I mean, I've seen a couple of early reviews that have come in over the weekend. It looks like people are really enjoying the novel. And I remember reading The Snow Child, and some of the imagery in that book is still with me today, just in terms of the way that you craft a story and just some of the images in there. And of course, being from Alaska and you being from Alaska as well, and sort of describing the sort of almost mystery of the woods in a way, and what that does to folks. It's just fantastic. It's just really fun. Now, you mentioned To the Bright Edge of the World. I know that was your last novel, which is in 2016, which is, you know, we're coming on 9 years, I guess, for that. So when folks learned, like your agent or your publisher, your editors, fans, that you were crafting a news story, what was the reaction?
Luckily, the reaction from my editors and agent was patience, because that's what it required. It was a long haul for me to write. And I think at first I didn't really, it took me a while. Once I'd come up with the idea and I proposed it and I signed a contract with my US and UK editors. So it was on, you know, I was bound by contract and we were rolling along with it. It just ended up being a hard book to write for me. And I think part of it was just trying to figure out how to tell the story. And like I say, luckily my editors believed in me all along, and they kept coming back to it and reading it and offering me tips and saying, okay, this part's still not there. And I think really what it took was just being really honest, being able to actually write the story that I wanted to write. And it took me a while to get there. And as far as, you know, I think the one downside of having taken so long is I think I worry like, oh gosh, maybe people have forgotten about my first book, you know? So trying to get word out about it now and let people know that there is a new book. I think that's the downside of not being as prolific as some writers. But no, I'm getting a lot of wonderful support from people who have read The Snow Child and are excited for this one. And I think it does share some similarities with The Snow Child, but I also think it's pretty different. So maybe that's a little bit where my nerves come into, is, you know, how it's going to be a different story for people to read, I think, in ways than The Snow Child.
I know I've read in different interviews and stuff that you always, in essence, threaten to never write again. So because you describe it as it takes a lot out of you to write a story, because it feels like, and especially with this book, the new book, Black Woods, Blue Sky, it feels like it's, in essence, it's even more personal for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because there are times when I write that I just love the process. And I think everyone who writes or creates or does art, you have these moments where I think the term flow or whatever, you know, where you really feel like you're connecting with what you want to do and it can feel so great. But other times it's just hard work. And I just feel like I kind of scour my imagination for anything that fits in and does what I want it to do. So by the time I'm done, I do. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't have any new ideas. And right now I think, oh, I just don't know if I could do it again, you know. But my family laughs at me when I say that, and they predict that I'll start thinking of a new story eventually, but we'll see.
Yeah, the eye rolls from the kids and the husband, like, yeah, okay, come on, Eowyn. Don't you can't fool us. But it's interesting because, like, you have you know, writing is can be anyway, can be obviously a very lonely process, right? And you're inside that world by yourself. Do you share parts of the story as you're going with, like, your family?
You know, I know lots of great writers who just are completely want to operate in a vacuum while they want to get the whole, like, say, a first draft done without interacting with anyone else. And I am just not like that. I'm a communicator. So it's like if I finish a chapter, the first thing I want to do is read it out loud to my husband, share it with my daughters, email it to my daughter in Montreal or whatever, you know, and I kind of need that constant feedback. And it's a bit of a double-edged sword because I want them to tell me what they like, but also tell me what they don't like. And that's can be, you know, it's helpful because I can learn early on maybe what's not working. But yeah, I'm definitely a sharer. And I shared it with my I'm fortunate enough to get to work with the same editors again that I worked with the Snow Child and in the US and in the UK. And I shared it with them periodically throughout the process, you know, and tried to really, it's hard. You really have to set your ego aside, you know, and just I tried to really take in everything that they were saying. And sometimes it's about what you know as an Alaskan that other people, so our familiarity with bears and our sense of the level of danger or not danger, that whole thing, I kind of took that for granted. So it took me a while to realize, like, oh, I need to explain some of that part of it too. So that's all good interaction that I have as I'm working on something.
Will you share just sort of the basics of the plot to that we
Sure.
what we need to know about the book?
Yeah. So it's set in the same kind of imaginary Wolverine River Valley that I invented for the Snow Child and to the Bright Edge. And that kind of is this the space that I allow for mystical, you know, supernatural things to happen. So it takes place in that same landscape, but it's a more modern tale. It's set like in the 80s, 90s. And the basic premises of it is a young single mother named Birdie is working at a roadside lodge in Alaska and kind of just struggling to keep her act together and support her little girl. She's got a 6-year-old daughter. And she starts to fall in love with this kind of strange man who lives in a reclusive cabin on the other side of the river, far, far from the roads and the lodge. And I think she starts to think that maybe this is a better life for her and her daughter. And so she moves out there with him. And if you look at the cover of the book, it kind of gives you a good inkling as to what's going on, because you'll notice that on the cover, if you look at it, there's an outline of a bear and his shadow is a man. So there's a little bit of a shape-shifting quality. And the man's just is dangerous. I mean, that's it. But he's also got a lot of wonderful traits about him. So the story is about, you know, what becomes of that and what I think what it really the heart of it is Emmeline, 6-year-old little girl. She's the one who is sort of witnessing everything and being changed by it. It's in ways I feel like it's sort of her origin story of how she becomes who she is, I think.
We'll take a short break. Our guest is Pulitzer finalist and author Eowyn Ivey. Her latest novel, Blackwoods Blue Sky, is out now. This is Juno Afternoon's Rainy Day Conversations from KTOO. Thank you. This is Juno Afternoon Rainy Day Conversations. We continue now with Alaskan author Eowyn Ivey. Her book, The Snow Child, is available in over 25 languages, and today we are talking about her new book, Black Woods, Blue Sky. I'm curious about when you get the idea for the story. And of course, you talked about how, you know, Beauty and the Beast was a book that you were given as a young child. Had you thought of writing something about that, but it took until now to be able to do it? And then when you decided to sit down, how did you start?
Yeah, so I think that for quite a long time, it had kind of been in the back of my mind to maybe retell my childhood in a sense and my childhood fears through that lens of the Beauty and the Beast story. But I just couldn't, I don't know, it's funny how something can seem so obvious once you land on it. All that time, though, I just couldn't quite figure out how to do it. And then somehow it just clicked all of a sudden that if there was Beauty and the Beast set in Alaska, that beast would be a bear. And of course, there's a lot of indigenous stories in Alaska throughout North America, really all around the Northern Hemisphere, about men who are also bears. And then on top of that, I wanted to play with the idea of who Beauty is, right? Like, so Beauty in this story is sort of an anti-Beauty. I mean, she's beautiful, but she's troubled and she's chaotic and she doesn't really have her act together, but she's trying her best, you know? And so I kind of wanted to turn some of those tropes on their head as far as who Beauty is and who the Beast is. And then I just started writing, you know, and I have to say there were so many different versions of this as it went along, things that didn't work and things that worked. And I was just trying and trying. And I think I had kind of a breakthrough moment when I realized that I could tell part of the story through Emmeline's eyes when she's 6 years old. And that to me sort of cracked it open a little bit. And to be honest too, you know, during the time that I was writing this, I mean, we went through as a world, we went through major stuff with COVID. I was writing during COVID, but also during that time, both my mother and my father passed away separately from cancer. I was their primary caregiver and it was this very intense time. And it was very, very hard, of course. But the one thing that happened is once they passed away, it allowed me to write a little more honestly, I think. They were big readers of my work. They were big supporters of my work. But I didn't want to hurt them by depicting a story that maybe they would see aspects of themselves in or of me. So the story changed. I started writing much more fluently and I knew what I wanted to say when that those changes happened in my life. And that kind of started coming together faster.
Going through grief and the process of that, but then also, like you said, it kind of opens the door to maybe being able to honestly, because I know to me as a writer, it's scary to like put words down on paper because then they sort of become truth, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially if you're examining things in, you know, through this lens of a narrative storytelling, but if you're examining things about your own childhood, to be able to be that open, and feel and be able to feel that courage to do that. And then the idea of looking at it through Emmeline's eyes, does that open up? Do you start thinking about as a writer, like, do you think about like, okay, am I telling this from first person or third person or multiple people? And this sort of book sort of has a little bit of that, right? Sort of multiple viewpoints in terms of how the story, because there's also Warren, who is Arthur's, the lead man, the shape-shifting man, his father. And you learn a little bit about that as the book goes on in terms of how that all transpired, unfolds. But so does that sort of like you said, that once you realized you could maybe look at it through Emmeline's eyes as well, that sort of unlocked a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when did that happen in the process? When did that happen that you
saw
that?
Unfortunately, pretty late in the process. I wish I'd realized it sooner. And that's what's so funny about, like, I feel a little embarrassed about how long it takes me to write a book. And I look back on it and I realize that, like, it just takes me a while to sometimes to kind of figure out the obvious. So I had written, you know, from Emmeline's perspective at all these different ages and different views. And I just didn't, I guess maybe a little bit of it sort of self-protection, you know, it's hard to enter into some of those childhood memories and to kind of get into just to allow yourself to really confront them. And so, but what was interesting is that once I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing. It came very quickly to me, her voice. And it's interesting that you mentioned Warren too. He's another one. I rarely have this happen, but every once in a while, I feel like I'm just channeling someone when I write a character. And Warren was like that for me a little bit. Like when I wrote my first chapter from Warren's perspective, I felt a little bit like, wow, where did that come from? And that's always a wonderful feeling. And so those two characters, I felt like I don't know, I could just step into them fairly easily. Whereas Birdie, the main character woman, and Arthur were more difficult for me in ways to kind of try to get into their minds and understand how they worked.
Do the characters, as you're writing, because I know this happens with plays, and playwrights sometimes talk about this, where the characters start to tell you the story.
Yeah, and I mean that sounds like a pleasant thing, but sometimes it's not a pleasant thing. I mean, I feel like Birdie and Arthur evolved. You know, even though I talk about this being somewhat inspired by aspects of my childhood, Birdie and Arthur are very, very different than my parents. And they started to, as they came together as characters, they started to sort of dictate some of the things that happened in a way that it's like you have to be true to the characters. I feel like that's the most important thing, really. So that began to kind of change certain elements of the story that it went way places in ways that I didn't really expect, which is also a wonderful thing. It's a little unnerving as a writer because you want to feel like you've got everything figured out and you know where you're going. But on the other hand, it's kind of exciting because you think, oh wow, I didn't see this coming, you know. So they definitely, those two characters definitely evolved and became fleshed out as the writing went on.
I love that it's because you're controlling it. I mean, you are the writer, right? But then it's all of a sudden you're writing something, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute, this is going places that I wasn't expecting. I imagine, like you said, could be exciting, but also a little unnerving because you're like, wait, am I going to be, how deep am I going, right? How
Yeah,
much am
that's
I?
exactly it. It's exactly it. Like, how far do you want to go with this? And yeah, it's an interesting it's an interesting process.
Take a short break. Our guest is Pulitzer finalist and author Eowyn Ivey. Her latest novel, Blackwood's Blue Sky, is out now. This is Juno Afternoon's Rainy Day Conversations from KTOO. Juno Afternoon, Rainy Day Conversations. We continue now with Alaskan author Eowyn Ivey. Her book, The Snow Child, is available in over 25 languages, and today we are talking about her new book, Blackwood's Blue Sky. I want to go back to the beginning a little bit in terms of just you as a writer. Do you recall when the written word first entered your life?
Well, I mean, I think it's like before I can even really remember because my mom was such an avid reader and she read to me all the time when I was very, and I think she read me The Hobbit when I was probably a toddler, you know, and I so it was there before memory in a sense. But there are certain key moments. Like I remember reading the first book in the Boxcar Children series on my own and it being like this kind of magical moment where I was like, oh, like you could just completely you're inside the story, you know. And early on too, I started playing around with writing silly stories. I mean, I remember one time when I was probably, I don't know how little, you know, old enough that I could write, but not write very well. And I wrote a story about a planet inhabited by magic cats, you know. So early on, I loved doing stuff like this. I don't know that I ever anticipated I'd actually be able to make a living doing it, but I always loved to read and make up stories.
When did you realize that someone was authoring the stories that you were reading?
Yeah, I think I was always really keenly aware of that, and I think I felt like a certain awe of the name on the covers of the books. You know, I've never. It's a great question because I've never really thought about this, but I do remember having this awareness that someone got to sit down and make up the story and write it. And that probably also comes from my mom. My mom is a po was a poet, so she was always jotting things down and writing poems. So I think it was just always there, this idea that that was a thing that a person could do. But I think I was also kind of raised to think that it wasn't a thing a person could do to make a living.
Yeah, so that gets into the next question, which I know you were a journalist too, but when did you start to begin to think about writing as a potential profession?
Yeah, so I went into college. My husband and I went to Western Washington University, and I started out as an English literature creative writing major. So, you know, during high school, those were the classes I did the best in. I felt like I was drawn to it, but I just didn't really know like how I was gonna earn a living doing it, you know. And so I started out English major, realized I didn't have any interest in teaching. That just doesn't come naturally to me, and that's kind of the best route for an academic. And then I switched to journalism then. So I feel like I've always been kind of circling around writing and reading and trying to figure out how to earn a living. But as a newspaper reporter, I mean, I loved it in a lot of ways. It was a lot of great times working at a small town newspaper. I worked at the Frontiersman for almost 10 years, and I learned a ton, and I learned how to be edited and how to write fast. But I knew all along that it wasn't really the writing that I wanted to do, that that fiction is what I wasn't reading, like, you know, the world's newspapers for fun when I was working at the newspaper. I was reading novels, and that was really where my passion was. And so I did finally kind of get the courage up to give it a go.
Were you writing narratives before the Snow Child?
So yeah, what happened is I realized that working at the newspaper, I just did not have the mental space or the time to write for fun. You know, by the time I was done with my day of writing, I was zapped. And I thought, okay, if I'm gonna make a go of this, I need to figure out a way to keep making money, but also have sort of the creative, you know, well to come, you know, to work on this stuff. So that's when I left the newspaper and started working at the bookstore at Fireside Books in Palmer, which was the best choice I could have ever made. I mean, I didn't realize how important that choice, because suddenly I was just surrounded by books and people talking about books, and I was filling that well. But I did. I started writing a completely different novel that I would kind of describe modern as modern realism set in Alaska. And I was bored to death with it. And I didn't know how to fix it. And then, you know, it really was sort of just serendipity that I came across that little fairy tale that tells the story of Snegorochka, the snow child, that kicked off and kind of re gave me the key to, I guess, to write the story that I kind of wanted to write, but I didn't realize it.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty great. And like I was saying earlier, the imagery in The Snow Child is so memorable. I remember experiencing that book and the snow and the crafting of the child, and then like, you know, coming to life. I mean, it was just, and then the journey that they would take through the wood. I mean, just these different these images that would come out of the book that have stuck with me all these years. And
Thank you for that.
yeah, and in my reading of this book, I'm feeling that same sense. I'm feeling that same sense of, and I don't know if it's because you grew up here and you sort of understand like the mythology of Alaska, but there's something about it that sort of takes me into this, you know, I guess this is what it is. A lot of times I know it's described as sort of magic realism kind of thing, like, you know, or supernatural or whatever, but I feel like it transcends into a kind of truth that's seen, quote unquote, by the characters in the book and how they then are affected by the world around them. And there's something about that. And it just sort of allows for whatever's going to happen in terms of the supernatural elements or the things that might not be believable in the quote unquote real world to be real.
Yeah, no,
And
I really appreciate that. I feel like that's, I mean, yeah, that means a lot to me. And I agree. I'm not sure. I think it gets labeled as magical realism because there's kind of like not, I don't know that there's another term that works, but I agree. I'm not sure in terms of when you look at like South American writers and the history of magical realism, I'm not sure it quite is similar in that way. It's just sort of this one fantastical element. And I have to say, I do think, I have weaknesses as a writer, certainly. I have trouble with plot. Plot is probably my biggest issue that I struggle with. But writing about Alaska does come more easily to me. I just feel like maybe it is just living here. It's something that I've always been interacting with and interested in. So I love to write about it. So it means so much to have a fellow Alaskan. You know, that's kind of the highest praise to come from a fellow Alaskan. That means so much to me.
And I know that the Snow Child was turned into a musical in 2018. It was about 5 years or so after the book came out. It was premiered at the Arena Stage, and it had some Bob Banghart, who was a Junoite, worked on that,
Yep,
did
that's
the
right.
music for that production, along with some other, you know, Molly Smith, who used to run Perseverance, directed it, and it played at the Arena in 2018. What was that experience like, seeing it turned into a musical?
It was very surreal. It was amazing. And actually my family and I, we were so fortunate enough to be able to go to Washington, D.C. and see it on opening night. I think it was opening night that we went. And it was amazing. I mean, and what's so wonderful about that process is like me taking a fairy tale and turning it into a novel. It's now something very different from that original fairy tale. And the same is true then when it gets transformed into a musical. It's kind of like a dream that you've had where it's kind of like your real world, but not quite, right? It's something's a little bit different, you know? And it's a really amazing experience because now it's being put through these filter of these other amazing, talented, wonderful people. So it was amazing and surreal, and I was just incredibly honored to see that. And I know that some of the people that were involved with that production are still continuing to work on redeveloping it and doing some more stuff with it. So I'm really excited to see down the road if it ever, you know, comes back up again. I'll be really excited.
And your work is so visual. I'm curious if you've had any thoughts or if there's been an opportunities to maybe turn the Snow Child or your other work into visual medium like film.
Yeah, so the Snow Child was optioned and then actually purchased for a film to be made into a film by a group called Tangerine Entertainment out of Australia, an independent film production company. And unfortunately, I think partly what happened is that COVID hit right around the time that I think they would have been really actively working on it. So the rights actually came back to me on that. So right now there's nothing like that in the works. And you know, I'm kind of okay either way. Like, obviously, it's a huge honor and it's really exciting to have someone interested in making it in a film. On the other hand, that comes with its own nerve-wracking elements because I think we've all had that experience where we love a book and then we go watch the movie and it was like, wow, that was really nothing like what I imagined. And I don't have any interest in writing a screenplay, so it's really going to be up to other people. So yeah, we'll see. Either way, I'm happy with it either way.
So, attention all filmmakers, the rights are available. Get a hold
They
of A.O.
are
and Ivy.
available.
Go to aoandivy.com and you can reach out to her
Yep.
agent and find out how to get the rights to that book. Because I think it would make a fantastic story. It could even now, especially with television, turning things into limited series, which allows a book to actually
Absolutely.
be told more in its full glory as opposed to trying to fit it into 90 minutes or 2 hours. Because
No,
then
I
it
agree. I'm really excited about where, you know, the sort of the evolution of films and television has come into this kind of interesting you know, combination of the two, like you say, in these limited series that can be streamed. And I think it's really exciting what's a lot of the storytelling that people are doing on there now,
Yeah, it's
definitely.
really fantastic. So we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, how your characters go through the world and how the world affects them and how Alaska affects them. Are you able to articulate how you, Eowyn, see the world? And does your writing reflect that?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, I think certainly aspects of my writing reflect my perspective. I think the core, the most important things, which is I think that, you know, I like to see Alaska for what it really is. I feel like they're like we were kind of talking about earlier, the mythology, the idealization of certain things. And I think Alaska certainly falls prey to that. So I think that my views on Alaska as a place, and its people, I think are very true to how I see them. And I think my sense of both of being keenly aware of both the tragedy and the hope and love that is a part of life. I feel like that reflects it. Now, I do get asked occasionally, like, if I believe in supernatural occurrences, and I don't. I mean, I wish I did. Like, I love, but that's what I love about fiction. And I think that was the key that I figured out with The Snow Child is that it doesn't all have to be literally true. Like, we can write whatever we want, and that things that we imagine can be metaphors for what we're trying to express. And so I feel like that's been sort of one of my joys in writing is being able to use that sort of some of those supernatural elements to put a different perspective on things that maybe otherwise seem too familiar and we can't really see them clearly. I don't know if that makes sense.
Is Eowyn walking around in the woods outside of her house and seeing things come to life? I don't think that's what happens to
No.
you. But you
No,
can
no.
imagine things. You can maybe get inspired by what you're seeing and be like, oh,
Absolutely.
that would be an interesting thing. Oh, that snow looks like a XYZ. And let me like think about that for a little bit.
Well, and that's one thing I love about writing this stuff too, is that it makes me like, in the new book, there's a lot of imagery having to do with wildflowers. And I have like a limited knowledge of wildflowers. But working on the book, suddenly I was carrying my, ID books with me everywhere. And I was looking at the flowers so much more closely. So it's kind of this symbiotic relationship, with the book that it's feeding my interest, and then I'm getting even more interested in wanting to learn more. And same with bears. I did a ton of, even growing up here, we know a certain amount about bears, but I did a lot of research. So in ways, I feel like the writing, when I start working on a novel, it's like an excuse to get out and really appreciate and experience Alaska even more than I already was. And I love that part of the research and the writing.
Yeah, I have this dream, and it really is a dream because I doubt it will ever come true. But I want to set. I would love to write a story. Maybe I should start with short stories. I don't know. But I feel like Juno is ripe for a detective or, something about the land here. Like, there's just a lot here in terms of the nature and sort of the isolation and because there's no roads in or out of here, and so there's a lot to mine there, and so in my brain I feel like it's percolating whether it will actually ever happen or not. I am a Gemini, and I was told when I was a kid as a Gemini that I'm supposed to write a book someday,
Oh, there you go.
and
Perfect.
so that's always been in the back of my mind, but I don't think it'll actually ever happen. But it's kind of like
Well, you never know that, and that percolating phase is actually my favorite part of the process. That's the fun part when you just have these ideas. But I agree, and it's funny. I in a recent interview with an Australia radio host, she was asking me about, I think what she described as big character energy that Alaska has,
Oh, yeah.
and it's true, like it's got main character energy. But the thing is I actually think that's true of any place. I really do. I think no matter where you are, if you just take the time, whether it's New York City or Hawaii or Arizona, Florida, like any place as has these eccentricities and interesting things in the landscape and the people that if you spend enough time there, it's a great source of inspiration and creativity, I think.
But you do find that no matter where you go or who you talk to, once you say you're from Alaska, there's something about that that triggers people, and instantly that, oh, I've always wanted to go to Alaska. And
Yeah,
I always say, well,
absolutely.
then go. Like, it's
Yeah.
easy to go because but there's something about the sort of nostalgic feeling or the idea of the woods, escaping from the day-to-day. Even though we all deal with the day-to-day here in Alaska too, So,
Absolutely.
okay. So I want to talk a little bit about your writing process. We were mentioning the percolating is sort of something that is good for you. What is your writing schedule like? Is it, do you each day you want to accomplish a certain number of pages? Are you writing at midnight? Are you getting up early? What is your day structured like as a writer?
Gosh, I'm just doing anything I can that will help me get the words on the page. So I'm really like I've got tons of books about writing, and some of them are about writers' routines because I find it really interesting, and I'll try every single one of them. And especially, like I say, working on this book, it was a difficult time in a lot of ways, both personally and worldwide. There was a lot of chaotic things, a lot of distractions. So I've tried everything where it's like, okay, I have to write 500 words a day for this, and I'll have a calendar where I'm Xing off every day. I write 500 words, or, you know, I can go to the coffee shop and write at the coffee shop and have a scone if I get this amount of done first, you know. So all these, like, you know, these things to tempt me to, and ultimately the thing that worked the best for me while I was working on this one is that we had this playhouse. When we bought the property we have, it was kind of a funny, quirky place. It was sort of a recreational cabin place. And there was a tree house that was up pretty high up in the trees, and the trees were rotting. So my husband lowered it down and it became a playhouse for our daughters, and they're grown now. And so with my husband's help, I converted it into a little writing shed. And that really, you know, it's just a little walk from the house, but I have to walk up a hill. It doesn't have electricity. It's got a little wood stove now. And there was something about that that helped me kind of leave behind the rest of the world and just go up there. I could have connected to the internet up there. Our Wi-Fi router reaches, but I would pretend that it didn't. I wouldn't bring my phone, and I would just be there with it. And that was sort of the routine that worked well for this book. But I will say, I find that every single book, every single writing project, I've got to find some new trick to help me get in the mode, you know? So it's, I guess, being adaptable, that's become my goal as a writer, is to be adaptable to circumstances.
We'll take a short break. Our guest is Pulitzer finalist and author Eowyn Ivey. Her latest novel, Blackwood's Blue Sky, is out now. This is Juno Afternoon's Rainy Day Conversations from KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon Rainy Day Conversations. We continue now with Alaskan author Eowyn Ivey. Her book, The Snow Child, is available in over 25 languages, and today we are talking about her new book, Blackwood's Blue Sky. Other people will dabble in writing, but don't pursue the publishing of their work. When you were doing The Snow Child, how did that process go? In terms of, like, we're talking about business now a little bit, in terms of, like, going from the writing, the creative process, to then saying, okay, now I have to get it out there. What do you do as a writer to do that?
Yeah, it's hard. And I think it just keeps getting harder and harder, is my sense of it. I mean, in ways, like, there's just so many books out there. There's so much to compete with in terms of just the volume of material coming out. At the same time, I think there's a lot of new opportunities. So there's some exciting things going on in publishing. With me, it felt very happenstance, to be honest. But I've talked to other writers who've had the same experience. So when I was starting to work on The Snow Child, and I had also kind of half written this other novel, both my mom and I, because we were very good friends, and we started going to lots of writing events together, because she was a poet wanting to get her poems out more. So we started going to places like AWP, writing conferences, and we went to Kachemak Bay Writing Conference in Homer, which I highly, highly recommend to people from Alaska or otherwise. But the truth is, there's these kind of writing conferences happening all across the world all the time. And I think they're a great place to go. And my primary goal was just to go and meet other writers and sort of talk to people and learn about what the next steps would be, because I was only about 2/3 or 3/4 of the way done with that manuscript for The Snow Child. But when I got there, one of the main presenters was an agent named Jeff Kleinman, who had represented several books I knew. And I kind of didn't, it hadn't really been on my radar until I was there at the event and I was reading. I was like, holy cow, he did this book and that book. And my mom said, thanks to my mom, said, go and talk to him. You know, you get these moments where you can sort of, you know, give your blurb. Here's my elevator pitch for my book. So I thought, well, what the hell, right? I've got nothing to lose. I might as well go and talk to him about it. And basically, the long and short of it was, he offered to represent it there at Kachemak Bay, even though I was not done with it. And he and I worked together over the next few years to edit it, bring it up to speed, and then he took it out to publishers, and it went from there. And again, it sounds fairly like just pure luck, but the truth is, I think that's a great place for people to meet face to face with editors and agents, because when you do send your stuff in, I mean, certainly lots of people get agents through submitting, you know, online, but that face to face gives you a moment to maybe connect with someone and really explain your work better. So I highly recommend that to writers.
Yeah, the blind submission process can be a little daunting, I guess, because it just sort of seems Absolutely. Like you're sending it into a void. So being able to meet face to face, like you said. So what happens then as a writer, when the snow child blows up, what happens in terms of the business side of things? What happened to you?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, because before what actually happened, which was an interesting process that I wasn't even aware of, is that before the book had even come out, it had sold, you know, to, like, I don't know, at that point, maybe a dozen translations, a dozen countries. And those earnings paid off my advance. So I was as soon as The Snow Child hit the shelves, I was earning royalties on it. So how it works is a publisher will give you a certain amount of money, isn't it? And a quote unquote advance, which is basically paying you for the book. But you have to earn out that advance before you start making royalties. So whatever the bigger the amount, obviously it's great because you get a big check, but then you have to kind of, it's like a debt you have to pay off to the publisher in a way. So yeah, that was just, it was incredible. And I think it ended up being The Snow Child ended up being, like, I think we're at maybe 30 translations or something. It's just insane. And a couple of them had kind of expired, the contracts had expired. And just recently I signed up with a new Spanish publisher and a new French publisher who are also doing my new book as well. So it really opened, I think that's the biggest thing that The Snow Child did, is it just opened doors. It opened, you know, the potential for, like, well, having a conversation with you or other people, being able to go to different writing conferences or whatever. And I think my favorite part of this whole thing is that I get to then read, I get advanced reader copies sent to me for potential blurbs. So that's probably one of the biggest perks of this job, is I get to read books. Rachel Joyce, one of my favorite writers, has a new book coming out, and I got to read it ahead of time and give her an endorsement for it. So those are some of the fun aspects of it that I had no idea was even part of the job.
The bennies, as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
I know we've had the opportunity here on our show to talk with all kinds of writers from around Alaska, and I'm just curious about your take on the Alaska writing scene, because I feel like it's pretty vibrant.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I feel like every year new books come out that I'm excited about. And, you know, I mean, if you have people like Dawn Reardon and Seth Kantner, but then Lily Tzerlik with her new book, Savulik, which is just amazing. People like John Straley, Chris Farman, his series. I mean, I could go on and on. I just feel like there's, I feel like we have an overabundance of wonderful writers in Alaska. And I don't know why we get to be blessed that way, but I'm very, very happy for it, you know? So yeah, I think it's, and who knows, maybe it is partly the landscape. I think that's sort of the stereotype, but maybe there's something about it that it feeds the creative mind. I don't know. But yeah, and I feel like it's just, it's exciting to see all the new things coming out, you know, where small publishers are starting up and literary magazines and all of that. And I think that's an important thing for writers to think about too, is, you know, I feel like sometimes the goal is these big publishers, which are wonderful in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of small publishers doing great things too, regional publishers. And I feel like Alaska has a lot of that, wonderful opportunities that way.
Well, and it feels like our state, obviously in terms of land, it's giant. In terms of people, it's not so giant. So being able to be inside that writing community, it is a community, right? You're all able to connect and talk with each other and talk about the business. You're not separated by, you know, too many people being involved, and you all share that joy of being from Alaska, which is really kind of cool. So you are going to be the keynote speaker at the Northwoods Writers Symposium in May of 2025. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, or what that experience is going to be for you?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, because a number of years ago I was at Skagway as one of the participating faculty members, and I just had so much fun. It's a great, you know, it's a small enough setting that you really are interacting with everybody in a very collegial way. It's a strong sense of camaraderie that I just loved. And yeah, I'm looking for it. I'm really honored to be the keynote speaker. To be honest, I felt a little intimidated by it, because I kind of feel like I just feel like we're all equals in this whole thing. And I don't know that I really like to be put up as, like, okay, now I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you all some answers or something. I don't know that I have any answers, but Jeff Brady was really wonderful when I kind of voiced some of those. I was like, but what do I say? And he said, just share your story, you know, share what you've been through. So that's kind of what I hope to do in the keynote, is talk a bit about how I came to where I am and the pros and cons of different ways that I went, and just kind of try to share some of that with people. But like I said, I don't come from the education background that so many writers writers do. So I feel a little ill-equipped sometimes to like teach writing workshops or do these things, but I'm stepping out of my comfort zone a little bit and diving in.
Well, I think that he gave you the best advice, which is, you know, telling your story. And you've told your story today here on our show as well, which I really appreciate. I just have a couple more questions for you. These are a little random. They're just random questions that I'm interested in. What are your thoughts on AI?
Well, I think I feel like I'm reserving opinion, which I know isn't a very fair answer to. But I guess I just feel like a lot of this stuff, it's easy to sort of think, oh, this is our savior or this is our greatest curse. And I have a feeling it's going to be somewhere in between. I think I could see it serving a lot of great purposes and also being problematic for writers in ways. And so I think maybe I'm just kind of wishy-washy when it comes to this kind of stuff. I'm always like, well, I don't know. Maybe there'll be some good, or, oh, I don't know, maybe it's going to be terrible. But I do think it's probably going to be a combination of that something, and it's sort of inevitable. And I think as writers and creators, we're just going to have to kind of keep our eye on it and figure out how to use it to our benefit, but not let it use us too much, I think.
I think that's wait and see kind of idea there.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you could wake up tomorrow and have one thing changed in the world of writing, what would it be?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. Well, I sometimes do feel like the focus on big publishers and the amount of sort of consolidation that's happened among the big publishing companies, I think that there's some wonderful aspects of it, and they have a lot of ability to get word out about books. But I guess I would love to see a rise of smaller independent publishers. I just think that there's the potential there for a lot of, you know, working at a bookstore, there were some books put out by smaller publishers that I just thought were phenomenal that didn't get the recognition that I think they deserved. And I kind of would like to see that change. I don't know how that happens, because a lot of it does have to do with money and power and different things. But I would love to see those books. People like Chris Farman's books are just phenomenal. And I would love if they had a broader audience, you know. So I guess I'd like to see those books continue to be raised up even more and more, I think.
Yeah, I think the people are self-publishing now. But again, it's like, how do you get the, you know, how do you get the marketing? How do you get the people to hear about your book? You know, like even in something like the Advanced Readers Edition, which I have of your new book, Blackwood's Blue Sky, you know, at the back, there's a whole thing about here's the national publicity and marketing campaign, which, you know, is the benefit of, you know, being a Pulitzer Prize, you know, finalist and having a book that has blown up in the past. And then you get the opportunity to do some of the things that maybe somebody who's publishing, you know, their third or fourth independently novel doesn't really get to do. And they're just looking for that audience. So I love that answer in terms of just being able to get more books into more people's hands.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think really what it's about is that not every book is for every person. And I feel like there's kind of this push for these mega, mega hits that everyone loves. And I think, oh, but it's okay if not everyone loves the book. What matters is getting the right book to the right person, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel it on my side too. Like sometimes when I'm scrolling through looking for books to read, I'm like, okay, I know about all these. I want to know about some more interesting, obscure things that aren't on this, you know, on this promotional package or whatever. So I'd love to see. And I do think that's one of the benefits of technology right now. I think more and more opportunities are opening up. And I guess it's readers just keeping our eyes open for those books that are a little more off the beaten path.
It's like looking for an independent film as opposed to the latest, you know, blockbuster.
Exactly. And that's an interesting comparison, because I feel like in ways some of these streaming services have enabled some more independent and foreign films that I remember as a kid in Palmer, Alaska, like trying to find a foreign film on a VHS. Oh, it was not going to happen. And now, I mean, there's so much that you can access and watch. And I would love to see more of that on the publishing side, in the book world, you know, of being able to more easily access some of these other books.
If you could give advice to young storytellers out there, what would it be?
I think that what I would say, and it's the hard, I think it's very hard advice to follow, but I think, and I remind myself of it. I actually have a thing up here on my bulletin board that says, remember, the writing is the fun part. So I think that when we start, and especially someone like me who's kind of a high achiever, like as soon as I start writing something, I want it published, I want it out there, I want, feedback on it. And I think that sometimes it's important to just write for the love of the writing and just let it take its time and don't be in a rush to get published. I mean, I think it's good to be brave and start sharing your things with people that you trust. But I think that push to get published too soon, I don't know. I don't think it necessarily serves us well. And it's okay to take your time. And then when you do get rejected, because you will get rejected, we all get rejected. I've been rejected. It'll happen. To not try to try not to focus on that. Just start working on the next thing. Focus on the writing, I think, and the fun that you're having in that process.
Last question. You've chosen to stay and work in Alaska. Have you ever had thoughts of living anywhere else?
You know, not no. I would say when I was like 13, 14 years old, I thought I was going to leave Alaska and never come back. I was so done with Alaska at that point. And then so then I did leave, and my husband and I went to Western Washington University down in Bellingham for 4 years, and we did a lot of traveling together. And I've realized that actually I love it here. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I like to travel. If I can somehow sneak off to Hawaii in February, that makes me very, very happy. I love to travel. But I realized Alaska is a unique place, and it's in me now, and it's a part of who I am. It's where we've raised our children, and I can't imagine ever living anywhere else, but I can certainly imagine vacationing other places.
Absolutely. Now, I know you mentioned February, which is when your book comes out, Blackwoods Blue Sky. And I know you're doing interviews like this one and on other channels and things like that. Are you doing anything like a book tour, or are you traveling?
No, I mean, I've got a couple events coming up. I'm going to be, and I think this is official now that I get the chance to go to Louise Erdrich's bookstore in Minneapolis, Birchbark Books. I'm a huge fan of hers, and she was so kind as to read this book and endorse it. And I get to go there and do an event in March. Some of the details are still getting ironed out, but that's a go. And I'll be at the Tucson Book Festival at the same time, right after that. So mid-March, that's all happening. And I'm going to be doing some events around Alaska here and there as I can schedule them in. But no, I don't have a big book tour, and I'll be honest, that's kind of a mixed blessing. I find book tours pretty exhausting. I've done them before with both my books, where I was kind of one city a day kind of thing, flying every afternoon, and it's just exhausting. And so I'm doing a lot more of this kind of thing, like I'm talking to you right now, which is back to the whole technology thing. It's one of the benefits of technology is I'm able to do a lot of like Zoom conversations with people online as a part of the promotional, which has been really fun.
That's fantastic. Well, we are talking the day before Eowyn's new book, Blackwoods Blue Sky, comes out. It releases February 4th to the world. You can find it at all the major online areas, but really go to your local bookstore and purchase it right here in Juneau. I'm sure Hearthside will be having these books in their stores. And you can also find it at other independent booksellers online if you don't happen to find it in Juneau. So, Eoin Ivey, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here. Thank you so much for having this rainy day conversation with me. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. I so enjoyed it. It was really great talking with you, Boston.
Thank you to our guest, Eoin Ivey, on this rainy day conversation. That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. You can find out more about Eoin at her website, eoinivey.com. That's EOWYNIVEY.com. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program. Gwyneth Cheese for listening today, and have a joyous evening wherever you are around the globe.